Wondering if your mind and your body and your health are all connected? Well, we're going to answer this definitively today. Welcome to Talking with Docs. I'm Dr. Brad Weening.
I'm Dr. Paul Zalzo. We have a guest today, Dr. Chewback.
Welcome back, John.
Thanks.
This is something a little different than what we usually have you talk. We're usually talking about plumbing, veins, arteries, lymphatic system. But now you're going to talk about the mind?
Yeah, this is one of my passions, actually.
Love it.
The first thing I would say is that when we talk about the mind, guys like us who are MDs, who had a formal background in quote-unquote hard science and the basic sciences, et cetera, first thing I would say is that your mind is not your brain. Your brain is a 3-pound organ that sits in a bony case called your skull, and it's more of a neurochemical, chemical, electrical switching station that directs your body in all kinds of functions.
Right.
Not just opening and closing your hands, but all kinds of bodily functions relating to the endocrine system, hormones, immunology, et cetera. It's really complicated.
Okay, so what's the mind then, if that's the brain?
Yeah, it's a great question. I would say that the mind is more of an activity. The mind is not something that's limited to your head. This is a bit philosophical. This is more of what we're going to talk about today is a little bit more of a model, and it's in the field of what I would call positive psychology. So I think of the mind as sort of inhabiting every single molecule of our whole body, not only every cell, but every atom of our body, that it's just a part of who we are. And I think of it more of an activity as opposed to a structure. And the other thing that I would say about that is that when we were in school, when we went through med school and everything, one of the major rotations was psychiatry.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And because all physicians, with very few exceptions, are going to have to deal with patients who have different emotional problems, neuroses, sometimes psychosis, et cetera. So you really need a strong background.
Maybe just the pathologist. It's probably the only one that gets spared.
That probably does. And maybe some radiologists who are not interventional,
So.
But the rest of us have to deal with the public on a daily basis, and it's really important to understand something about psychology. But the strong emphasis there is on psychopathology, the diseases of the mind.
Sure.
True. Very true.
And the problems with the mind. That's not what we're talking about today. Today I want to talk a little bit with you guys about the potential of the mind, the fascinating and magnificent, extraordinary potential that the mind has on your body and can have on basically any area of your life.
I don't mind that at all.
So we're not talking about bending a spoon. We're talking about like how this can affect your health on a daily basis.
Exactly. I mean, and you could take it in any direction. It could be how your mind is responsible for any of the results that you have in your life, what level of education you have, what job you have, how much money you earn, you know, how you deal with that money. But today, I think the idea would be how we use the mind to direct our health and wellness to the best of our ability.
Okay.
I mean, one of the basic examples that I would give, based on another video that we all did together recently, think about bariatric surgery, for example.
So surgery on the stomach or intestines to reduce calorie intake?
Exactly. Generally, it was reserved for people who were morbidly obese in the older days, and now it's still for people with elevated BMIs, but the indications are looser. But nevertheless, historically and still, that surgery was not something like other surgeries, like a broken femur, where you just take it to the operating room and you fix that femur. Mm-hmm. You know, you put a rod down, you do whatever you're going to do. Mm-hmm. Historically, and I think appropriately, patients who are suffering from morbid obesity, we know that there's a mind component to that. There's definitely a psychological component to that.
Of course.
So as a prep for surgery, even in the approval process, those patients typically have to see a psychologist, a nutritionist, a dietitian, a therapist, because you can perform that surgery on a patient and do a perfect operation, but we've all seen it many times over the years. Patients can eat their way through that afterward if their head is not in the right place, if their mind isn't in harmony with everything else that's happening with their body. So
you're saying we kind of known about this all along, because we used to, even back then when we did that kind of surgery more frequently, we still had the psychological assessments and things like that. So we knew something was up with the mind.
Exactly.
And the health.
And even now, if you fast forward to where we are now, let's say with the GLP-1 agonists, don't you think there's still a part of that?
For sure. And I'd say even in orthopedics, like, and I'm sure you had this in Vascular, there are people that I see and I think, this person, I just know they're going to do well. Yeah. And then this person, I'm like, I'm really nervous that this person is not going to do well because of things that they say or they do or behaviors or kind of common characteristics that I've seen over the last 20 years that are like almost pseudo red flags. You're like, this makes me nervous.
Exactly.
But it's not tangible necessarily.
Exactly. And so if you use, let's say, the GLP-1 agonist example.
So Ozempic, Wegovy, those kind of medications.
Weight loss medications that many, many people, millions of people are running to because they see it as sort of a magic pill. Mm-hmm. And in a way, it's quite dramatic. But I have a close colleague that I work with who's unfortunately morbidly obese, diabetic, almost lost his leg, a wonderful guy, family man, great guy. And I spoke to his endocrinologist recently, and who's happens to be one of my patients, and we're quite close. I called her and I said, hey, have you thought about putting so-and-so on a GLP-1 agonist? And she said, Johnny's on the maximum dose.
Right, not working.
Because he's mentally not there. He's eating through that. So
when you say mentally not there, you mean not
he's
ready?
He's not on board with it, right?
Yeah, right.
The medication is doing its job, but he's still overeating because, now this is where we start to get into this subject matter. His paradigm, what we call the paradigm, which is a group of thoughts, beliefs, and habits that resides in the subconscious mind, is still set for morbid obesity.
Right. This is what he's used to. What's common. What's comfortable.
Exactly. It's his comfort zone.
Right.
And so, the way that. These are, again, this is not anatomy. We're not talking about neuroanatomy here. We're not talking about the brain. These are constructs. This is a model of understanding kind of what makes us tick as human beings. And we're different from all the other little animals in the world. They don't have this kind of highly developed mind that we have. I think of the mind as having three parts. The conscious mind, which is the thinking, awake mind. It can also be called the academic mind, the intellectual mind. It's the mind that we're all aware of when we're awake. And then there's something called the subconscious mind. And the subconscious mind, we're not aware of. Mm-hmm. You can't hear your subconscious thoughts. You can't see your subconscious thoughts. But they're always there.
Right.
And the only way to really know what your subconscious mind believes in. It's also called the emotional mind. The ideas that you've fallen in love with, okay? The ancient Greeks called it the heart. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. Mm-hmm. That's the subconscious mind. The ideas that you've fallen in love with and they drive your habitual behavior. If you want to know what your subconscious mind is really tuned to, what frequency it's on, what its paradigms are, you have to just look at your results. Mm. The results never lie.
Okay.
The results in your life, whether it's your weight, whether it's your eating habits, whether it's your drinking habits, whether it's your exercise routine, whether it's your income, et cetera, it's not a judgment as good or bad, but I can assure you, my belief system with regard to this, that it's a reflection of what your subconscious mind believes.
I've also heard similar, but not quite the same, some people say, well, you want to find out what's important to you, look how you spend your time and how you spend your money.
Exactly.
And then that would kind of show you something about yourself, whether it's intentional or on purpose or whatever, similar to probably your subconscious mind.
Exactly. And the subconscious mind, as a child, the subconscious mind is wide open.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And that's why most of us learn so many of the things that make us when we're in childhood. They say the Jesuits, the academic class of the Catholic Church in the old days, for 400 years, they said, give me the boy until the age of 8 and I'll show you the man.
Hmm.
When we're a child, we learn our habits, we learn our rituals, we learn our religions, we learn our nationality, we learn our national
cultural stuff,
sure. What sport, because the mind is wide open.
Mm-hmm.
And the subconscious mind is what we call amoral. Not immoral, but amoral. It it doesn't care what's right or wrong. It doesn't have a choice to choose. Whatever you plant there, it's like fertile soil in a garden.
Right.
It will grow. If you plant sweet corn, it will grow that in equal abundance to nightshade, a deadly poison.
What if you planted kale, John?
He won't eat it.
No. And I'm not proud to say, all the time you've been talking about the subconscious mind, I've been thinking of chicken wings. I'm not proud of it,
but
I'm just saying that's what's been going on here, funny. In case you're wondering. So you gave us three parts of the mind. You gave us the conscious, the subconscious.
And there's the superconscious mind. Now, the conscious mind is separated from the subconscious, as we come into adulthood,
and
maturity, let's say by the age of 8-10 years old, our intellectual mind, our conscious mind becomes developed. And we start to make our own choices. We start to have our own thoughts. And that is separated by what we call the psychic barrier. Mm-hmm. A psychic barrier forms. And now if you want to reprogram your subconscious, you have to do that through repetition. Repetition is the number one thing. If you want to change your eating habits, your exercise habits, your feelings toward kale, your feelings toward chicken wings, you need to sort of perseverate over these ideas again and again and again, because that psychic barrier that separates the thinking mind from the subconscious and the superconscious is a tough thing to penetrate. It's hard to quote unquote change your mind. And you'll see that only reflected in your results. So your thinking mind, your conscious mind may say, I really need to stop my salt intake to help bring my blood pressure down.
Right.
I really need to stop, you know, the fast food and the processed foods and, you know, the high saturated fat foods that my doctor keeps telling me about to bring my cholesterol down. But your thinking mind accepts that and knows that's right.
Yeah.
But then you go for your blood work, and your cholesterol is still through the roof, your lipids are through the roof, triglycerides, your blood pressure is still high, your BMI is still high. So you know that you haven't affected your subconscious belief system yet.
Right.
Your thinking mind is on board,
mm-hmm.
but your subconscious mind that makes all the real decisions in terms of your habitual behavior and drives your results hasn't changed. So you know you still have more work to do.
Okay, so are you gonna tell us how we can accomplish this? Do you have any tips?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the main tips are the powerful tool of autosuggestion.
Okay.
What we call self-talk.
Okay.
So if this is talking with docs. So we'll say self-talking.
Right. Self-talking with docs.
Right. If you want to change that subconscious paradigm, that set of beliefs, the first thing you have to do is, it's not like a hard drive on a computer that you can erase
mm-hmm.
and just replace. The subconscious can never be, that old paradigm can never be fully erased, so you have to inundate it with new data. It's like you have virus code. You have virus code on your hard drive that you can't get rid of. So you just need to install tons and tons and tons of good software. So you want to read everything you can about good health, about diet, exercise, wellness, nutrition, supplementation.
Almost like overwhelm yourself with convincing data that this is what I should do.
Yeah, and you want to pick friends like you, right?
Mm.
You want to choose your companions very carefully, because they say, you know, your results are going to be a reflection of the five people you spend the most time
right.
with. You think about when we were back as surgical residents. We live crazy lives.
Yep.
People don't work the way we did, get up as early as we did, study as much as we did. The reason that we were able to do all that was because we had that tendency, but there were a bunch of other people like that
doing
around us,
thing.
Right?
Yeah.
Doing the same
normalize
thing. Seemed
the,
normal,
normalize
right?
the toxicity.
Exactly. So you want to be a guy with this guy who normalizes lots of kale and, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I need to spend more time with him.
It's not working for me.
Just
eventually, though.
Hang in there.
10 years and counting.
There's still a little.
But I'm not giving up.
So, autosuggestion, self-talk, choosing the people you spend the most time with, what you read, what you watch on television, what you listen to, you know, on podcasts and on the radio, what you doom scroll on the internet.
For sure.
You know, you want to be inundating your subconscious with positivity, good health tips, wellness advice, et cetera, et cetera. Really immerse yourself in that. And what I believe is that The subconscious mind is basically like a beacon. It's like a transmitter. And once you get on a certain frequency, you start transmitting that out into the universe, and you're saying, hey, this is what I'm looking for. And the belief is that whatever you're in search of is also in search of you. And that's where the superconscious mind comes in. It's like a receiving dish. It's like a radar or sonar receiving dish, like a radio antenna. And it's tuned to that same frequency. So it's listening for people who are in tune with that way of thinking. It's looking for books that are going to be on that subject. It's searching for podcasts that are in tune with that. I always say it's sort of like when you get a new car and then you drive down the highway, all you can see is your car every place.
Right.
You know, what you're in tune with suddenly starts to reveal itself to you. So if you can, through conscious thought, reprogram your subconscious to fall in love with this new way of life, this healthy lifestyle, etc., then you'll become a transmitter of that vibration out into the universe, and you'll become a receiver. It's like tuning an old transistor radio.
Yep.
You can only receive the frequency that you're tuned into. You can't get jazz if you're tuned into hard rock.
Okay.
So that's sort of the idea of how important I think the mind is in promoting all of this good health.
And what kind of health thing? Like, we talked about obesity, we talked about hypertension. Are you thinking of like other health conditions or a variety of health conditions that can be managed this way, or are they all only the lifestyle ones?
Well, I think certainly stress.
For sure.
Anxiety, to some degree mood. I mean, of course, there's real clinical depression and things. But any area of your health and wellness that you feel needs or could benefit from improvement, you can look at that as a silo, as one single paradigm. Your paradigm isn't one gigantic overreaching thing. It's made up of, I think about like books on a bookshelf.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my weight, here's my fitness, here's my blood pressure, here's my cholesterol, here's my level of happiness, here's my level of anxiety, here's my exercise routine, here's my diet.
Yep.
And each one of those things, you want to focus your mind on thinking about those positive ideas, that positive psychology, and reinforcing for your subconscious over and over and over. You know, I should get to the gym 3 or 4 times a week. I should start walking 20 to 30 minutes a day. I should substitute one meal a day for, let's say, a vegetarian meal. I should, you know, how about this? I should really quit smoking. I should really quit smoking.
For sure.
I should really quit vaping. I should really, you know, quit getting high. I should really, you know,
drink less or not drink at all, yes.
Right? All of those kinds of things. But if you don't take control of your mind, like that transistor radio, and you just allow the environment to, because we're connected to the environment, the conscious mind is connected to the environment through our 5 senses. The 2 biggest ones is what we hear and what we see.
Right.
Right? So if we expose our eyes and our ears to pathological behavior, bad behavior, sick behavior that causes sickness and disease, well, then we're stacking the deck against us. I always say, you want to live your life more like a thermostat than a thermometer. As a thermostat, you can set the temperature to what works for you. As a thermometer, you're just reflecting the ambient temperature around you. You're just doing what everybody else does.
And I think that's so important. I think the consistency side is really important. So it's not what you do just necessarily today, but you want it to become a habit. And I read a book this year, The Power to Change, by this really interesting author, Craig Groeschel. And one of the things he said is you have to think about what you want most versus what you want right now. So if you're trying to lose weight, like you want that piece of pizza, but you have to say, well, listen, what I really want is I really want to lose weight. And making the choice to have the pizza now is going to prevent me from getting to that goal of what I really, really want. And I think that's kind of what you're talking about, is decide what you want and then try to implement changes to do that.
Absolutely. And if you want to know what your subconscious paradigm is, what your belief is, what idea you've fallen in love with in your emotional mind, just look, did I have the pizza or did I lose the weight?
Right.
Your thinking mind can fool you. It can, and here's, now this, we're getting a little deep. We're getting a little heady.
I think we're there.
Okay, so we're there. The other thing, as I said, your mind is not your brain.
Right.
You ready for this, Paul?
I don't know.
Sitting down?
Yeah.
You are not your mind.
You're out of your mind.
your mind is something that you're in possession of.
Okay.
Otherwise, then you're just reacting kind of reflexively to your environment.
Right.
You have to take control of your mind like that thermostat, and you need to be the one who's you. I believe the spiritual being,
right.
Okay? I say that, you know, my belief system is, it's not for everybody, but that you're a spiritual being in possession of a mind, living in a physical body and interacting with the material world. Because if you are your mind, then how can you possibly take control of it? Exactly, like I have a hand. It's not am hand, I have a hand. This is my hand. I can open and close it at my will. I can turn it over if I wish. I can put it on the table. It's my hand. I'm not the hand. And your mind is exactly the same way. So you can say, look, I see that the results that my subconscious mind are bringing, this blood pressure, this eating regimen, this nutrition regimen, this lack of exercise, smoking, whatever it is. So therefore, those results are not reflecting how I'd like to be. So I need to change my thinking. As a man thinketh, so is he. So the six most powerful words, I believe, in all of this material is, you become what you think about.
Okay.
And the caveat is you become what you think about most of the time, because nobody thinks about the same thing all the time. But if you want to improve these areas, you have to take control of the mind, and you have the mind think what you want it to think, so that your subconscious gets seeded with the sweet corn of life and not the nightshade poison of life.
Okay. What do you think about, you know, you've seen some people online and read some information about, is the mind so powerful that it can control other diseases that we traditionally think are independent of the mind, like autoimmune diseases,
diabetes.
Cancer, well, some diabetes, but like just certain types of, you know, diseases that you can get that you wouldn't traditionally think you can fix with a lifestyle thing. I know some cancers are lifestyle, but like cancer, for example, you got a cancer, you have a tumor. How much influence does the mind have on shrinking that tumor compared to chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery?
I think, again, as an allopathic physician and the strong background in hard science and so forth, I don't like to get too woo-woo on this kind mm-hmm. of thing. But what I would say is that I think that it certainly plays a role.
Right.
I certainly think that if you look at the health status, generally speaking, and again, now going back to people with psychopathology, people who have depression, chronic anxiety, et cetera, phobias, and so forth, they tend to be sicker than people who have a very healthy mental status.
Like physically, you mean?
Physically,
yeah.
Correct. And then you can, I mean, oftentimes, right, if you see a patient come in the office and they're very disheveled or obese, not properly bathing, you know, not shaving.
Like self-care stuff.
Right.
Like post-call, Paul.
You can see that there's something going on psycho-emotionally and psychosocially, but it's affecting the person's physical mm-hmm. nature as well.
Right.
So I don't think there's anything to lose by even, I remember my father was a physician who's passed away now. He used to kind of go through this exercise where he would, you know, lie on the bed and imagine that little white blood cells were going around his
okay.
body
yeah.
and cleaning up atherosclerosis or fighting cancer cells and so on and so forth. It was something that he believed in and he did routinely. He lived to be 96.
It worked.
So in his case, it worked. But what we do know is that we don't know everything.
Yes.
We're learning all the time about the potential of the human mind and that psychosomatic connection. So for example, we used to believe that, you know, psycho, the mind or psyche, and soma, the body, there's this idea that, oh, it's you gave the patient a sugar pill to lower their blood pressure and 10% of the patients, their blood pressure got better. It's a psychosomatic response.
Placebo effect.
It's a placebo effect, it's not real. But it tells you that it is real, that psyche, the mind, has
power.
Somehow the
yeah.
power to lower the blood pressure
right.
if the mind really believes that it's getting. So
right.
So there's no question that in all these studies that we've seen over the years, there's a small percentage of patients who believe so strongly in the placebo that it actually affects their blood pressure, their blood sugar,
right.
et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So there must be some link. how powerful it is or how to use it effectively to treat and cure disease like a cancer, we don't know yet. But certainly, along with all of that other good medical care that patients are getting, nutrition, exercise, care, surgery, chemotherapy, whatever the case may be, I think that positive thinking about your outcome and your wellness can only be a plus, and it could never be seen as a minus. And the one other thing I'll just add about how much we're learning all the time. I think it's when I talk about this idea of that we're transmitting, let's say, a certain paradigm out into the universe. That's kind of woo-woo stuff. Do we have this telepathic power? I don't know. Probably not. But I like it as a model, anyhow, of the mind. But on the other hand, it's only a few years ago I heard of magnetoencephalography, MEG scanning. Mm. Now, magnetoencephalography is a really fascinating subject, because what we've, and Paul like this because he's an engineer, when you get an action potential, when you get electricity, a current firing down an axon, a nerve cell, okay, for the listeners, a long nerve cell, mm-hmm. when you get electricity firing down that nerve cell, that creates a magnetic field mm-hmm. around that nerve. Whenever you have current, you get a magnetic field around it. Mm-hmm. Well, now we know that magnetic fields produced in the brain from neuronal activity are actually being emitted beyond the limits of the head. It's going through the cerebrospinal fluid, through the meninges, through the skull, mm-hmm. through the skin, and into the room, because they have these MEG scanners now that don't make any contact with the patient's head. There are what they're called squids. They're these very, very highly sensitive receptors. And those squids are picking up magnetic potential energy from the brain, that it's being literally emitted out into the room. Now you say, well, that's kind of an interesting, you know, physics or physiology thing, but who cares? Well, they've done studies now to show that in paralyzed patients, through thinking and while sitting in an MEG scanner, it's not a very practical thing to walk around with because it's a big mm-hmm. machine, but while sitting in an MEG scanner, if the patient is connected through a computer to a prosthetic limb and he thinks open, the hand is open, and he thinks closed, right. it closed. And just through thought and an MEG scanner that is not with electrodes touching his head, he's in no way connected to this patient, he's emitting thoughts that are meaningful and carrying a message that can control a prosthesis to open and close.
Because that's traditionally done now with an implant or electrodes.
Exactly.
It's actually commercialized.
I think that's fascinating.
Your magnetic field theory goes both ways, because I know that there's a big body of research looking at using magnetic fields and electrical fields to migrate neurons in damaged parts of the brain, too.
Right, but that is when you're using an outside source.
So it's kind of saying it goes both ways.
Yeah, exactly. So I just say one last thing about that, MEG scanning versus, let's say, MRI or CAT mm-hmm. scanning. In MRI or CAT scanning, the machine is emitting something to the patient, either magnetic energy or radiation therapy in the case of a CAT scan, right? So the machine is inundating the brain with something to create a picture. In this case, the MEG scanner doesn't emit anything. It's only
detecting.
A sensor. It's only receiving. Mm-hmm. So it goes to show you that we are literally, as we sit here right mm-hmm. now, emitting brain waves. Now, whether or not you can pick them up or they mean anything to you.
I can pick them up.
Brad's up right away.
I can pick you up.
Well, there we go. So we settled that.
I'm picking yours up.
So I just think it's fascinating. And all I'm saying is that we have, I'd like to be around 100 and 500 years from now to know how much more we've learned about all of this.
It's awesome. And obviously very, very different than our historical videos. I think it's, I agree, it's so interesting. You didn't realize René Descartes was going to be here. I think, therefore I am here. But now you know all about this stuff. And if you find it interesting, please like it, subscribe to our channel, share it with someone that you think would benefit from this conversation.
If you find it interesting, read one of the books. How many books have you written about this?
A few.
Available on Amazon, right?
Yeah, check out Make Your Own Damn Cheese.
Okay. We'll put a link for it on Amazon. I mean, I've never written a book. I wrote a note once, lost it. I've never written a book, so that's incredible.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Remember, you are in charge of your own health more than you think now.
There you go. We'll see you next time.
As much as you think.